Hello everyone, and thanks for choosing this podcast. I'm Silvia, and today I'm gonna take some time to talk with my fellow colleagues of Global Sustainability Science at Utrecht University about human well-being on Mars. It's my pleasure to welcome Lotta, Christina, Agnese, Naomi, and Lawrence. Earth's planet is burning due to its lack of strong political leadership on climate and biodiversity issues and the corporate interests of few billionaires. Even if we wish we could save our lovely planet, the chances of succeeding in it are probably the same, or even lower, than colonizing another planet, Mars. However, it is difficult to imagine how humans could live well and prosper on a planet that is so hostile to life. In this podcast, we will discuss the well-being of future civilizations on Mars by taking into account six factors: physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, and environmental well-being. So let's start with satisfying human physiological needs: air, water, food, shelter, clothing. All that's needed to nourish a healthy body. First issue: there's little water on Mars and no plants or edible animals. How do we deal with this, Naomi?
Yes, water is required before we can even consider the prospect of eating on Mars. Fortunately, we've already discovered how to collect and store water from the soil. The soil will be heated by the water extractor until the water has evaporated. The evaporated water will then be condensed and stored. The dry soil will then be ejected, and the process will be repeated to recover further water. Water is also found on Mars in the form of ice and hydrated minerals. While the ordinary Martian is unlikely to have cow's milk or orange juice for breakfast, they may keep hydrated by drinking water. The water will also be recycled instead of being extracted from the Martian soil, which will save us a lot of energy. Only water that cannot be recycled will be replaced by water extracted from the soil.
Damn, we seem to be well organized. And what type of food can we expect to be part of our diets?
Well, on Mars, algae and insects are anticipated to play a huge role. Food will be produced indoors under artificial lighting. The plants will be shielded from radiation by a thick layer of Martian soil on top of inflated domes. CO2 for the plants will come from the Martian atmosphere, and water from the recycling on the Martian soil. Plants' nutrients will be obtained by repurposing human feces. The Martian diet is looking pretty healthy so far, but that does not mean that dentists of the future will be out of jobs. NASA has challenged people to come up with a way to convert CO2 into glucose. This could mean that there is a possibility of having cake on Mars. Furthermore, the possibility of growing cocoa beans are still unknown. For now, scientists are working on ways to increase variety in the diets of astronauts and improving the shelf life of our favorite foods.
Yeah, apparently humans will have to spend a lot of time inside to avoid several threats to their lives, such as dust storms, cold temperatures, and radiation, as you mentioned. Okay, how are the human Martians supposed to keep fit staying mainly indoor, especially if the option of cake and chocolate becomes a thing?
Well, there is not a lot of air resistance on Mars, and its gravity is about 1/3 of that of the Earth's. So everything is going to go a lot further and a lot higher, which makes some sports feasible and others not. Sports such as basketball would be possible, whereas baseball will not. Of course, all of this would have to be done indoors for obvious reasons, such as the cold temperature on Mars and the lack of oxygen in the atmosphere. We'd have to terraform the entire planet if we want to play outdoors. we'll probably eventually have some kind of modified sports league on the Red Planet.
Well, at least there will still be some chances of having fun on Mars. What seems a bit more difficult is keeping up with our human fashionable style. From what we know now, it will be impossible to go outdoors on Mars without a spatial suit. Does it mean that we will be all wearing the same clothes, Christina?
Well, according to Stephen Petranek, an American writer and an editor of a technology newsletter, there are five things people would need to survive on Mars. These include food, water, shelter, clothing, and oxygen. Mars' atmosphere is about 95% carbon dioxide, 3% nitrogen, and 1.5% argon. And the gravity on Mars is only about 38% of the surface gravity on Earth. So, in order to survive on Mars, we will need a spacesuit. The spacesuits that have been used before are rigid, so they restrict the mobility. These suits would not allow Mars explorers to move freely and climb mountains. So Dava Newman, a professor of aeronautics and astronautics and engineering systems, have been working at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology with collaborators in various disciplines from around the world to develop a new kind of spacesuit. And she says that, "My hope is that astronauts who someday walk on the surface of Mars will be protected by a future version of what we are now calling a biosuit TM."
Biosuit TM, fancy! What does it look like?
The biosuit is based on the idea that there is another way to apply the necessary pressure to the astronaut's body. A form-fitting suit that presses directly on the skin. With an ordinary spacesuit, you are essentially in a balloon of gas that's providing you with the necessary one-third of the atmospheric pressure to keep you alive in the vacuum of space. We want to achieve the same pressurization, but through mechanical counterpressure, applying the pressure directly to the skin, thus avoiding the gas pressure altogether. We combine the passive electrics with active materials. And ultimately, the big advantage is mobility and a very lightweight suit for planetary exploration. Thus, the structure of the suit should be tight. So, shape memory alloys, which is a material that only contracts when heated and can be easily stretched back to a looser shape when it's cooled, will be used. The team incorporated the coils in a tourniquet-like cuff and applied a current to generate heat. At a certain trigger temperature, the coils contract and the remembered form, such as a fully coiled spring, tightening the cuff in the process. In subsequent tests, the group found that the pressure produced by coils equal to the required to fully support an astronaut in space.
That's so smart! Outstanding! At the same time, does this mean that humans will not be able to personalize or express themselves through clothes anymore, since there is gonna be a fixed design with a fixed material?
It's true, clothing ends up being a vehicle of self-expression because it makes you more aware of yourself. Fashion can become a vehicle of dissent. It can be symbolic for religions, cultures, regions, and movements. And since on Mars there are not going to be resources to manufacture different clothing, a digital fashion might be a way for people to express themselves and be creative. So if people are trapped indoors and there is no need to buy real-life clothes to show off on social media, it will be more cost-effective to buy an exclusive, limited edition virtual fashion item that can be modeled to fans. And the founder of luxury street wear brand called Off-White, Avon, says, "I want to make virtual clothes to paint pictures physical clothes cannot, and let buyers access a new dimension of their personal style, no matter who they are, where they live, and the virtual world they love." So, how it works. Once an item is purchased online, the customer sends a photo of themselves in for a digital fitting, and in a few days they receive an image of themselves wearing their new outfit.
Wow, so you're saying that virtual outfits will become a sort of new hobby?
Yes, indeed. and there are mental health benefits of such creative activities. For example, in 2015, a psychologist and art therapist, Dr. Kathy, cited multiple studies confirming that being creative can increase positive emotions, lessen depressive symptoms, reduce stress, decrease anxiety, and even improve immune system functioning.
Sounds amusing! And what else can we do to express ourselves, our feelings, and understanding the feelings of others? Especially when it comes to personal relations, it might be difficult for the first settlers to keep in touch with their relatives. Isn't it, Agnese?
Yeah, the functional unit of current states, a family, may be a challenge to transfer to Mars, as we know it. For the first generation of Mars inhabitants, engineers and astronauts, ensuring communication with their family members and closest relatives to function well is going to be key for the survival of humanity as a whole. At least, that is what today's astronaut has to say about keeping their emotional well-being and sanity while on a mission. Also, communication between Earth and Mars-bound ship will be delayed up to 20 minutes each way. If an astronaut asks a question, 40 minutes could pass before they receive a reply. The ability to talk in real time with family, friends, and the people on a mission control is very important to astronauts. However, being able to stay in contact with the loved ones, either Mars to Mars settings or planet to Mars, is going to be what will keep humanity going.
But what happens after that? Think about your current, best or past relationship. Would you take it on Mars with you? And if yes, would it survive this ultimate test of complete isolation?
Maybe. You're thinking no, or you're unsure, then you're not alone. And there's nothing to blame each other for. Spending a long space travel with a tight space with a few people can be extremely intimidating. There are 35 million miles separating a planet and Mars. That is, after all, a lot of time. Experts today assume about 2.5 years to kill. But at the same time, spending almost 3 years in isolation with another human being can lead to love. Astronaut McCallum, for instance, lived in the biosphere too, a closed environment outside Tucson, for 2 years in the 90s. He spent the majority of the time with that one woman. She later became his wife and co-founder of Paragon, Jane Poynter. Now, who will lead in developing the crew and life support system for Inspiration Mars? It is clear, therefore, that when thinking of the future on Mars, we have to think about the relationship we lead today and what they might look like in some years. In a dystopian social science fiction novel from the 1930s, A Brave New World, Aldous Huxley explores the idea of society as a living organism. There is no family unit, no monogamy, no raising children. Everyone belongs to everyone. Children are being brought to the world artificially using genetic reproduction engineering. And adults are put into clusters or categories that indicate their role in the large social body. Food for thought, which is going to be?
That's crazy and overwhelming at the same time. Are there any experiments that already envisioned how the foundation of a new society on Mars will look like?
Already in 2013, a multimillionaire, Dennis Tito, who was the first space tourist, announced that his NGO has taken up the challenge of sending the first humans to Mars. The spacecraft they already are envisioning should accommodate only two astronauts, a man and a woman. This way, both sexes are represented as the Earth's first ambassador to the deep space. Otherwise, they would misrepresent humanity. Would you agree with this? Interesting. The Inspiration Mars group, for the first spacecraft, will be looking for experienced astronauts in their early 50s. An older man and an older woman would have statistically fewer years to live after their return than a young person, and so would be less likely to develop the cancer that radiation could bring. Will there be another love story? For example, scientists are exploring the concept of cognitive reserve. This posits that education and experience can help protect the brain against physical damage. NASA scientists are wondering whether cognitive research can also protect against radiation in space. Regardless, the effect of altered gravity can lead to physical problems, motion sickness, muscle wasting, and changes in the visual perception. Not just in who we want or not want to date. These changes could have a downstream effect on physiological well-being.
With education and experiences, maybe also spirituality might be considered part of the cognitive reserves and contribute to human well-being. Lotta, what do you think? Should we have religions on Mars? Is religion an inevitable part of human life?
Well, especially in Western societies, there tends to be a negative attitude towards religion among many people. At the same time, humans have neurological dispositions to believe in the supernatural. We like interpreting meaning into little things. This stems from the hunter-gatherer times, when a few rustling leaves, for example, could mean that there was a predator around. Also, we seem to have an exceptionally good memory for stories that contain supernatural elements, such as an ancestor spirit that remains among the living. Furthermore, religion has always helped to improve cohesion in human societies, and is believed to have replaced the function of mutual grooming in the animal kingdom. Therefore, it allows for bigger groups of individuals to hold together and strengthen their social bonds. In the Western world, where less people are religious now, there's the spirituality but not religion phenomenon. People are turning towards practices like yoga, meditation, or astrology.
That's a good point. Do you also think religion could improve well-being on Mars?
In general, people tend to turn towards higher powers in trying or insecure times. We like to believe that bad things happen for a reason. Also, science and rationality might not always be helpful when it comes to a crisis of well-being. For example, when searching for the meaning of life on Mars. Believing in some sort of supernatural force is also being linked to psychological well-being. Religion can give us access to our emotional lives and help us manage our emotions through rituals. This might be very important for an extreme living situation such as on Mars.
Should we then enforce a particular religion or spirituality on the people moving to Mars?
Well, people have already put some thought into this. There was even the idea of a special Mars religion, which could help the people there cooperate and survive difficult times. Religious stories can indeed be very powerful for providing a sense of hope. However, there were also moral concerns about imposing a religion on the people. Another idea could be not to implement a whole religion, but provide society with structures that help them deal with anxieties, fears, and emotions in a spiritual way. Since religion has been so important for humans throughout history, it should definitely be an aspect that should be considered more thoroughly when thinking about forming new societies.
Indeed, there are so many things to consider carefully when forming new societies. Another one is, for example, job or occupations. Am I right, Lawrence?
Yes, with all the limitations of Mars' physical environment in mind, there are different demands for work than on Earth. Most importantly, work on Mars will most likely be done by robots. The maintenance of the life-facilitating technologies will therefore not need many human hands. They need efficient relationships between the robots doing the actual work and the humans monitoring the robots that do the work. If life on Mars is largely dependent on life-supporting system technologies, jobs and the economy will also be limited. Most likely, there will be less room for careers in non-essential sectors like artists and top elite athletes. And what jobs on Mars will look like will also largely depend on what economy will develop on the planet. You could, for example, raise the question on how, where, and on what Martian citizens can and will spend their salary on. Currently, astronauts get paid in Earth currency and spend their money on Earth. Questions to think about will be, will there be a completely separate economy on Mars, or will we get an interplanetary economy? And will the Martian economy resemble Earth if it is that different, for example, in the Earth consumerism and us buying all the things that we want?
But in such a different economy, how will we facilitate well-being at workplace?
Yes, so luckily there has been a lot of theorizing on Earth about how to make people satisfied with their occupation. Because the jobs in an on life facilitating technologies dependent margin city are important for the city to even exist, it's important that citizens are satisfied with spending their time at work. Philosopher Dr. Harry Frankfurt calls this wholehearted action. Another term is occupational satisfaction, which can be achieved when one's actual occupation matches their desires. Therefore, motivation for work should not necessarily be the desire for money, but also the desire for the intrinsic value of the occupation itself. The need for survival as a motivator for one's occupation is different than on Earth. While on Earth a person needs to work in order to have money, in order to survive, or spend money in their free time, on Mars you need to work in order to survive. There are different explanations to what factors facilitate occupational satisfaction, and the most interesting I saw was from Matuska and Christiansen. They argue that in addition to the survival occupational needs, like meaningful social relationships and challenging activities are the most important factors for achieving occupational satisfaction. The latter two of social relations and challenging activity being something that can be practically addressed in the design of a workday. Christiansen has also explained in terms of social roles. A worker, parent, caregiver, those are things people want to take on. And Morgan argues that for a challenge to be satisfactory, however, one must also value the activity itself as worthwhile for there to be occupational satisfaction.
And for humans, it's also very important to relate to their environment. One of the things that scare me the most about Mars is that the environment is so different, with such an unusual and strange landscape. How will the human settlers deal with this feeling, Agnese?
Having lived and developed for millions of years on a planet in close relation with known human organism, the human population has developed a close relation with vegetation. Different studies show that closeness to nature actually is very beneficial for the human being. It has been connected to mental benefit and stress relief. If we think of an ideal futuristic city, wherever it is, we instantly think about trees and nature well integrated into the buildings of the city. But on Mars, the situation will be different. Plants will need to be grown inside greenhouses where the light and nutrients are stripped from.
Damn, so what kind of nature do you think we would want to bring to Mars?
It is clear that whatever kind of nature we'll bring on Mars will not be similar to what we have on Earth. The closeness and interaction with plants on Mars for early settlers might be a remedy for homesickness, but for the next generation, it might not be that crucial to have Earth plants and nature in living spaces. Some studies, in fact, affirm that our well-being in relation to nature is given by the fact that we were born in close contact with it. Next generation, though, will be born on a planet where access to nature is more limited, so it is not expected to be a crucial part of their well-being.
So we are talking of a new intergenerational perception of what is nature across planets.
Indeed, for many people on Earth, nature awareness is what drives them to behave responsibly toward the environment, limiting the use of resources and our footprint. On Mars, most resources will be created in an anthropogenic setting, and we cannot know what the effects on nature awareness will be. To increase knowledge on the limits of resources and solutions, one solution could be to educate and make it possible that each inhabitant comes in contact with how food and other resources on Mars are created or brought from Earth. For example, by creating shift can take care of the plants.
Thank you, Agnese, and thanks to all of my fellow colleagues for their stunning findings about well-being on Mars. We have had a journey across different stages of well-being here on Earth and have tried to project them on future life on Mars. There are many, many, many threats, but eventually also possibilities to develop a better society than the one we have now. Hope you stay with us till the end and that you enjoyed our podcast. See you on Mars, sooner or later.
Goodbye!
Bye.